to rescue each other, to honor each other as manifestations of the Holy One, even as we all struggle with our unique interweaving exploratory missions. Like any profound truth, this seems so simple, yet to live out from it isn't easy. How do we get to that better life? How is what plagues us, and batting against it often makes us so unhappy that eventually we have to do something about it, in spite of our fear that maybe there is nothing else to find, or that maybe we will fail, even if there is a beautiful river that promises to heal us and raise us up. To understand the how, we have to understand that our karmic imprinting gets in the way. Our present is the past. We live ghost lives, repeating apparitions of tragedies from generation to generation. Even if we think we are over the past, our childhood injuries and loneliness and deprivations stay with us. These primal images are superimposed upon the people in our lives, and when our subconscious hurts and fears are reactivated, we're programmed to shift instantly to an angry defense. Then, where we might not have gone on to believe in these embedded childhood reactions of ours, or feed them further, we look around and find them projected large in society and its institutions. So now they have authority, and we're not embarrassed by our anger. We're just doing as we see others doing, also natural and right. Beloved, let's see that the starting point in changing sits within our own personal tempests. It takes ruthless honesty and tremendous courage to work on our karmic scripts, to realize that other people are not our bad parents, to release them from blame and so release ourselves. This forgiving unto love will save us as it saves the world. Dropping judgment, we're no longer slaves to our conditioning, nor condemning our conditioning, for these faults have purpose in our holy mission. When we find compassion and honor for everyone with the eyes of God, we enter the place of great peace. Simple things are complete things. It takes digging to our roots, uncovering the original wholeness within us, to be wholehearted about any matter. The more stubbornly a grievance sticks with us, the more crucial it is for us to deal with that one. When we shed light on it, it may not entirely disappear, but it does lose its power. All beings who have ever lived are traveling together. We and the mosquito both are supposed to be here. Both fill our roles equally worthily. We can recognize the sacred identity of the other, even if it's a mosquito, even if it's our enemy, and help each other to overcome our iron conditioning. Mountains wouldn't tower without canyons or swales. They're part of the same rumpling process. Our problem person will be extolled because he's bringing us an issue central to our own ongoing. So you see how the place where we feel the most justified in our judgments, the hardest place to address, is the one where both antagonists, I and thou, are crying out loudest for help. When I was considering this topic for the column today, and looking for a sign of whether to go this way, along came a colleague who emailed me a thank you for some help, mentioning that we're all in the same boat, and so showed me that this was the right choice. So, in such a mysterious way, we are all connected, and we help each other by turns. We're not only all in the same pickle, we also, each of us, dip an oar in the brine. Together, we mesh into an extraordinary organism that is beyond the critique, the prodding, the understanding of any person. So we include everyone in love. Not only non-resistance, but welcoming love until the entire body becomes filled with light. So that was an essay of some current thought. And as I teach on this show, I do it extemporaneously. An artist puts a frame around a work. It could be an artwork or a literary work or a musical work. And outside of the frame, my life might be a shambles. From my point of view, a spiritual seeker, doesn't separate out his or her highs from the lows. We appear warts and all. People forgive us our faults or don't even notice them or think they're good because our intentions outweigh the failure to live up to the high mark. a lot of effort can go into attempting to find spiritual awareness. It's like the water dripping on the rock that finally wears through. A lot of effort can seem to be wasted, but there is equal value in a negative experiment that rules out a dead end. As the essay said, it takes a kind of ruthless honesty in our self-examination. It takes a tremendous courage to go beyond the paths we have already tried out a whole lot. When I was a kid, when I was 9 years old, I drew a maze. It was like a game, you might say. I drew a maze which was supposed to be an actual physical maze, and the seeker in the maze might be confronted by a couple of doors. You go through one door and continue. You go through the other door and you're trapped in that room. So that would be the end for you. And it's a similarity to life, because you can go through a door where you are trapped in a room, but in life, any place you can go into, you can come out of. We cling to the choices that fall short of the mark of the high calling. So we are hanging around in these waiting rooms, or these classrooms which we could graduate from. We put a lot of energy into them, partly because we're used to them, we're skilled with them, we know how to repeat within them. Something we're used to doing, like driving the car, can be done with a modicum of any thought at all. But if there's something new to learn, something that's not just obvious, like how to do something with a computer, which is like totally arbitrary and somebody has to show you and you have to practice and repractice. Those things can be intimidating. They're utterly new. Do we want to try out something when we're so good at what we were already working with? It's like that Sufi story. Mulla Nasruddin is searching the ground on the street for something, and his friend comes by and says, "What happened?" And Mulla Nasruddin says, I lost my keys." And he said, "Are you sure you were on this side of the street?" And Mulla Nasruddin says, "Well, I wasn't on the street at all. I was over there in the field, and it's a lot easier to look here in the street. You see, in the path that we're used to and that everybody takes." Yet it's really out there in the field, in the wild, in a place beyond. And it is a lovely place. It's a place where you can't get lost, because we're already lost in this world, but in the place of meditation, wherever we go, we're home. In the place of recognition, the one life knows us, and we know the one life. Because we are part of this one life without having to have earned it. Inherently, we grant the same divine identity to every creature. And there is a response from any creature. Speaking from experience, it can be a mosquito that refrains from combat with us. It can be a person who all respond to that spiritual energy. It's an energy, you might say. It's a plenum, a substance which is felt. It's not a force, it's not applied to something to make anything happen. It's recognition, it's awareness, it's companioning, it's communion. The term Mahayana, branch of Buddhism, means the great ferry which carries everybody, you see. There are other interpretations of why they chose that name, Mahayana. A ferry which carries everyone. you might also say, it's a lot easier to cross the river if you're just standing in only one boat. In other words, well, at first that might seem to mean that to find the right path, you have to reject other disciplines. This is not exactly what it comes down to. The truth is much more paradoxical in any case. We can distract ourselves by going from one study to another to another. On the other hand, when we become centered in spiritual awareness, everything is gathered into the carry-all of spiritual consciousness. If we are dancing, it's an expression. If we are reading something, we are listening to that expression of the spiritual. If we are meeting a friend, it's a miraculous event that is coming to fruition. If we have a dream, we find what our greater self is thinking about. The mystics are found in each religion. In Judaism, maybe among the Kabbalists. In Christianity, maybe especially among the metaphysical churches, like Unity, Divine Science, Religious Science, Christian Science, or among certain monastic orders. In Islam, there are millions of mystics among the Sufis. In Hinduism, where they call themselves Vedanta, there is the Advaita school. You can see how modern language comes from Sanskrit, without division, Advaita. In Taoism, we can experience mystical awareness in nature. There are mystics among the shamans. It's trans-denominational and non-denominational. We put the horse in front of the cart. We attain a spiritual awareness. And from that center, find our brotherhood. We find our brotherhood with our brothers and sisters in spiritual awareness, and we find our brotherhood with every being that there is, with a plant, with a rock, for each is growing through the processes of spiritual evolution. So we're a stone fairy. We can carry a mountain on our back and not sink. If we sink, we rise, where embodiments of paradox. Indeed, in order to ascend, we first descend. This world completely has its holy purpose. Being beyond form and being all one life, how do we create endless forms and endless relationships? By entering this world with its amnesia. And when we go astray, we're checking things out. Let us feel that silence and peace. Let us feel that presence within us and filling this whole room and filling the entire landscape around us, filling this world. A peacefulness and a brotherhood. So that we say to this whole world, thank you. We live in peace, great peace, Shalom Rav, the peace which passeth understanding. We live in love, unconditional love, divine love, compassion and forgiveness unto love. We live in joy. Joy which no man could take from me. Peace, love, joy. So this is KSKQ 94.9. This program, Really Being With You, 9:30 to 10 every Saturday. Thank you.
Folks say when you fall in love, you lose your appetite. Love makes you feel that way. Listen to what I say, dear. If love makes you give up steak and potatoes, rice, corn, chitlins, and tomatoes.